Welcome to Rethink, a podcast focused on the future of skilled nursing. I'm Amy Sulik, senior reporter with Skilled Nursing News. I'm joined for this episode by Tracy Moorhead, president and CEO of the American Association of Post-Acute Care Nursing. The association is working to address staffing and operational challenges by expanding its leadership training, certification programs, and data analytics capabilities, along with its workforce-focused initiatives. At the same time, Tracy underscored the need for policymakers and the public to rethink assumptions about the nursing home sector, recognizing the dedication of frontline professionals and the financial realities of delivering high-quality care. Before we get to that conversation, I'd like to highlight our next webinar, Planning Ahead, Staffing Lessons from 2025 and the Road to 2026. The staffing webinar will take place from noon to 1 p.m. Eastern Time on March 24th. Visit skillednursingnews.com and click on Webinars at the top of your screen to register or find out more. And now, my conversation with Tracy Moorhead. All right. Well, thank you so much, Tracy, for joining us. The first question that I have here for you is, you know, what do you feel are the top three policy issues for skilled nursing providers? And also, are there any under the radar issues that might become a problem down the line?
Sure. Well, first of all, thank you so much for inviting me to chat with you today. I'm really delighted to have this opportunity. Yeah. I would say our top concern, policy or not, is workforce. No surprise. Just because the staffing mandate has been eliminated, the problem of adequate staffing for our sector has not gone away. We still need staff, and most specifically, we need RNs and CNAs. As the care delivery sector, we need to better tell the story of why long-term and post-acute care is a viable career option, as well as to shine a light on and improve the workforce culture in skilled nursing. Our second concern is really the ongoing financial uncertainty and instability in reimbursement. We all know that Medicaid and managed care reimbursement often is not adequate to cover the cost of higher acuity residents. Inadequate reimbursement, including the increase in managed care reviews and financial takebacks, results in significant financial uncertainty and instability. And further, the big, beautiful bill, the one big, beautiful bill, has created the real possibility that states will have to make some decisions in the distribution of funds across all providers, not just skilled nursing, obviously. Mm-hmm. And that leads to questions about which providers get cuts, who gets paid less, but still is expected to provide quality care. The pie is simply going to get smaller. And the third concern is really the complexity of the survey and compliance burden. This includes changes to quality measures and the addition of claims data, including for antipsychotic use.
Mm-hmm. And then how do you think that the association will help improve workforce culture? You know, one of the most pressing challenges among members is workforce culture.
Absolutely. And this is critical. Our chief nursing officer, Amy Stewart, has been on a campaign for the last 2 years about culture. We believe that culture comes from the top. It requires daily care and feeding to engage and support staff at all levels, from owners to administrators to laundry and maintenance. We know that a good culture improves retention and outcomes, but a strong culture is more than just lip service, and staff must feel supported and empowered. One of the things we're doing at a pack-in that I'm very excited about for 2026 is that we have partnered with Long-Term Care 100 on a survey that will be released at that conference in April. And that survey will provide some real insights for owners and administrators on what drives staff satisfaction and culture and where culture might need to change and how it can change. We're very excited about this partnership with LTC 100.
Mm-hmm. And that's your event later this year, right, in Florida?
That's not our event. Our event is our annual conference in March in Orlando. The partnership that I was just speaking of with Long-Term Care 100 is their conference. That's their event. But they reached out to us for a partnership because of the breadth of our membership. And so we have fielded a survey on behalf of and with Long-Term Care 100 to really identify staff satisfaction and culture issues, initiatives, and concerns.
Well, that's exciting. Yeah, it sounds like a good partnership. And yeah, I'm curious to see what becomes of that.
Me too.
The industry, yeah. So then in terms of compliance, I'm curious what compliance trends are creating administrative burdens for nurses right now. You know, like, what are you hearing about that from your members?
It's all about survey. We hear repeatedly and often from our members that survey is one of their biggest pain points. And we know that regulatory oversight remains a focus for CMS. PACN has and continues to develop new resources to address these burdens and to provide guidance, such as survey readiness, preparation and tools, a guide to resident safety, and our QCP, which is QAPI Certified Professional Program, which is celebrating its 10th anniversary this year. We believe that the key to survey success is both staff and facility readiness education. Staff must be trained and have resources on how to monitor systems, conduct audits, and review documentation, especially on new admissions and those residents with a significant change or changing condition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that you mentioned QAPI too. I know that that has popped up with a lot of other leaders in the space to really focus on that for this year. And any thoughts around the new value-based care models that were announced through CMMI? Are there plans to help operators get involved with these?
You know, we believe that quality is a mindset, not a strategy. And that's something that we have really been talking about for a number of years. We can talk about value-based care, and CMS and CMMI have new models often. I've been in this space long enough to have seen dozens of care delivery models driving quality of care. And there's something to take away from all of those models on how to improve care. But the reality is that quality is a mindset. And when quality is a mindset by all staff at all levels, things like value-based care are successful. Whether it's SNF-VBP or SNF-QRP or ACOs, they all focus on quality outcomes. And if you can align your care delivery and your care planning to ensure that you're going to get the best possible outcomes, value-based care becomes second nature.
And then, you know, kind of combining quality care outcomes and staffing roles, we know that the director of nursing role in particular is being tied to value-based care outcomes more and more. The role has caught the attention of CMS, and I'm curious how the association is meeting this trend.
Absolutely. The DNS, or Director of Nursing Service, or DON, is the team lead for skilled nursing facilities in many ways. They're a staffing lead, they're a quality lead. Yet one significant challenge has been the high turnover in the DNS roles in facilities across the country. We've seen this since the beginning of COVID. New DONs, or ADONs, assistant DONs, are being put in roles that they haven't really had enough training for or don't have the resources to succeed in. And as a result, we're seeing increasing burnout, and we can do better to support these professionals. We have spent a number of years developing leadership training and career progression programs for DONs. This includes our DNSCT certification program and the previously mentioned QCP, QAPI Certified Professional. QCP, we specifically believe, helps facility leaders such as DONs identify their facility needs and gives them the tools to analyze the data and drive quality improvement in their facilities. For us and our legacy at APACN, it's really about empowering through education.
Mm-hmm. And then I'm curious how APACN is changing the discourse around post-acute care. Public perception and headline risk are other major hurdles for the nursing home industry. And the administration's decision to declassify nursing as a profession, it seems to only be adding to this challenge.
Yes. The issue of nursing as a professional degree is incredibly problematic. As I'm sure many of your listeners know, the Department of Education RISE Committee made a decision to exclude post-baccalaureate nursing programs from the definition of professional degree. This could create an ineligibility for student loans and would, I'm sure, immediately impact the number of nurses available, let alone coming into our care delivery sector. This is something that has created a lot of consternation among nursing organizations, and APACN has been supportive of an ANA initiative and through many of our other coalitions to try and push back on this. But you're right about the headline risk, because the layperson will read this and think, oh, nursing is not a profession. What does that mean? They're not going to totally understand what that means. We're doing quite a bit, actually, to change the discourse around post-acute care, and we have a renewed focus on that for 2026. I've already mentioned the survey that we're doing with Long-Term Care 100, and that survey is really going to be exploring the realities of skilled nursing and long-term care nursing to gain insights specifically from boots-on-the-ground nurses regarding satisfaction and culture. It will offer insights for facility owners and leaders to hopefully take a look at their own cultures and make any necessary adjustments. And this is hard. This is hard work. Culture is hard. I know many owners who have said to me, to our CNO, Amy Stewart, to others, quote, we don't have a culture problem. But the reality is that their staff, including their leadership, will tell you a different story. And so there's a disconnect there. And we're very hopeful that our partnership with Long-Term Care 100 will help bridge that gap, that disconnect, and really focus on that culture. That's part of what we're trying to do to change that discourse. In addition, APACN is launching a very significant initiative this year, a communications initiative, to really rebrand and elevate the perception of nursing in long-term and post-acute care. This is really coming directly from the leadership of our board of directors. And we want to highlight this sector as a career opportunity for current and future healthcare professionals, to highlight it as a quality healthcare sector on the broader healthcare continuum, and as a safe place for patients, residents, and families. So we're trying to speak this year through this initiative, not only to healthcare professionals, but also to the people who are impacted, the families and the residents who are going to be cared for in those facilities.
Mm-hmm. So then how will APACN's new direction, this expansion of certain resources, help with staffing and compliance education, as well as advocating for easing burdens on nurses?
So last year, APACN's board of directors spent nearly the entirety of 2025 developing and eventually approved a new strategic direction for the organization. And I have to say, it's ambitious, it's exciting, it's humbling to be able to help move in this new direction. APACN is really stepping up to highlight the value of the sector. We want to not only highlight the value of the sector of long-term and post-acute care, but at the facility level, we want to support operational efficiency and quality and excellence in these facilities. And then finally, the third pillar is to provide educational resources and leadership programs for skilled nursing professionals at all levels. So we've got opportunity to focus at the sector level, at the facility level, and at the individual professional level in our new initiatives. One key component that underscores all of this is kind of a platform as technology and how we are going to utilize technology both at a pack-in and in our educational components to help teach, guide, learn, support, create across all of these pillars. We want to ensure that technology is being used to support accuracy of the MDS assessment tool, accuracy and timeliness of care planning and implementation of that care plan, and compliance. We want to create and advance tools that reduce documentation burden and staff burnout. We want to help improve resident outcomes with data-driven decision-making and collaboration through guidance utilizing technology. These are a lot of the key components that the pack-in will be implementing over the next 2 to 3 years as we launch this new strategic direction for the organization.
Okay. And then compared to this new direction seems to be, you know, very data analytics, technology heavy. How have past initiatives fared in 2025 in terms of furthering staffing, compliance, education areas, that sort of thing?
Sure. I'd like to step back just a bit beyond 2025, because where we're going in 2026 and beyond is really just a continued evolution for the organization. Our initiatives over the past 5 years have really supported this, and this is just 2026 is just the most recent step forward. We started by shifting from an individual membership organization to an organizational membership organization. And we count some of the largest skilled nursing providing organizations in the country as our members, whether that's Genesis or PACS or many others. We shifted from individual nurses to nursing. We're supporting skilled nursing as a sector, as a profession. And one of the things that we did that was really most significant in launching the new pack-in, which we actually started this back in 2020, was to demonstrate the value of certification and the return on investment that our organizational members received from engagement with the pack-in. We have demonstrated that facilities with a pack-in certified staff have fewer survey deficiencies. We have demonstrated that facilities with a pack-in certified staff have a 9% lower occurrence of CMPs from survey deficiencies and a 30% reduction in fines per facility. That facilities with a pack-in certified staff have higher average 5-star ratings and higher quality measure scores. And so this research was really foundational in the work that we've done to develop new tools and resources in past years, and has driven a significant growth in a pack-in membership since we launched this new set of initiatives going back to 2020. 2026 is the launch of our new strategic plan, and we plan to build upon the work of the past 5 years to continue to grow and to continue to drive quality improvement in the skilled nursing sector.
Got it. And we know as well that the association will focus on educational products, like you mentioned, and certifications for specific roles. Looks like there's a focus on the resident assessment coordinator and director of nursing services. I'm just curious why these roles in particular.
I have to give credit to the founder of a pack-in and the legacy of the organization. Many in the industry know us as ANAC, the American Association of Nurse Assessment Coordinators. That's the name that we were founded under in 1999. And our original certification was focused on the resident assessment coordinator. And it's my understanding that the focus that a pack-in put on, or ANAC at the time, a pack-in put on the RAC or the NAC, the Nurse Assessment Coordinator, was really instrumental in having this role codified by CMS. And it was all about driving patient care and outcomes improvement. The organization expanded in 2016 by adding both the DNS certification and the QCP. And these roles were the focus because they really are foundational for skilled nursing facility success in compliance, in care planning, in outcomes, and ultimately in reimbursement. And so we're going to continue to build on that legacy of outcomes-driven quality.
And then was there anything else that you wanted to mention about initiatives for the association that you folks plan to launch this year?
Yes, and thank you for giving me the opportunity to do that. We will be updating the value of certification research that I mentioned earlier. We last conducted that data report in 2024. We've just launched the new data analytic process. We partner with a firm in Washington, Dobson DiVanzo Associates, and we have new variables this year. So we're going to be looking at whether facilities with one or more APACN certified individual have lower employee turnover to see how that's impacting staffing. Did facilities with APACN certified staff achieve higher SNF VBP incentive multipliers? And did facilities with APACN certified individuals have higher nurse staffing hours per patient day? So those are variables that we're adding this year to that value of certification research, and we'll have that available in April. We're going to continue to develop new member resources. We'll be launching an app for members so that they can access our tools and resources, including new micro-learning components by their phone, in their facilities, in their day-to-day activities. And that will happen later this year as well. We're launching a new certification for facility leadership. And I can't speak completely about that right now, but stay tuned. In the second quarter, we'll have big announcements on new certification opportunities. And finally, we are going to be building on our value of certification research with an entirely new data analytics capability that will launch later this year. And this is going to allow us to compare on real-time basis daily APACN member facilities, non-member facilities, and really help facilities understand what opportunities they have for improvement in compliance and outcomes. Mm-hmm. Lots to happen this year.
Yeah, you guys are busy. It's exciting.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm excited to see how those progress in the next couple of years. So I know that you mentioned the partnership with LTC 100. Are there any other collaborations in the works between APACN and other nursing home associations? And what would be your ideal collaboration?
I am a firm believer in not reinventing the wheel. And I also recognize that APACN can't do it all and none of us know everything. So I am a strong believer in partnerships and the value of those partnerships. We continue to have a strong partnership with ACA at the federal level, the American Healthcare Association, and we support their work in policy and advocacy initiatives, particularly around reimbursement. APACN is not a traditional advocacy organization. We don't lobby, but we do offer our expertise. And so we support organizations like ACA in those initiatives. We also have very strong partnerships with many of the ACA and Leading Age state affiliates. Many of these organizations are training partners with APACN, and it really just helps them provide resources and education to their members. Everyone has resource constraints, and these partnerships with the state level affiliates allows them to provide, without having to reinvent the wheel and develop their own education, to push down to their members APACN's quality education and resources. So those partnerships are very, very important to us. If you pressed me on my ideal collaboration, the thing that I stay awake at night thinking about really is how can we better support providers, recognizing that they have resource constraints, recognizing that they all want to improve the quality of their care. How can we do those things and provide demonstrable improvement in outcomes? One thing that I'd love to see is a partnership that allowed us to release CMP funds for workforce programs and staff training. if we were able to do this in an ideal way, we could result in a significant reduction of future CMP funds because we'd have well-trained staff and facilities and among surveyors that would result in a significant reduction in future citations and penalties. It's a win for everybody. I just don't know how to do it yet and haven't found the right partner. And I'd be interested in hearing from anybody who might like to brainstorm with us on how to do that.
Interesting. Yeah. So you said using CMP funds to kind of reinvest back into the industry for certifications, training purposes.
You know, it doesn't even have to be certifications. Let's focus on workforce programs that get nurses and CNAs into our sector, into our healthcare delivery sector, and provides other trainings. I'm not restricting this to certifications. This is a way that we could lift up the entire sector, skilled nursing sector. And I really believe that those CMP funds could be put to good use to do that.
Interesting. Okay. Curious to see what happens with that as well. So I have a couple forward-looking questions for you, Tracy, to round us off here. I'm curious how you think different aspects of the industry will evolve in the coming years. And, you know, this could be from a staffing perspective, operations, you know, whatever angle you want to take.
Well, two things really. One, we've already talked about quality a bit, and I just want to reiterate, quality is a mindset. It is not a strategy. It's something that is embedded and is second nature. It's not something that you should really have to think about. It just has to be the default. We have to embed that into every level of our professional sector, whether, again, it's the owner, the administrator, the DNS, the rack, the laundry person, the dietary person. Everybody needs to understand that quality is where we start and where we end. The second policy-focused aspect that I continue to be interested in, and you know, we see MedPAC talking about this often, is some sort of unified assessment and payment model for post-acute care. There's a lot of opportunity for the higher acuity patients to be cared for in skilled nursing. There's a lot of opportunity for a uniform post-acute care policy that I believe could better serve patients in the long run. And that's something that I think we'd like to have a broader conversation about down the road. I don't know what that looks like, because there are so many people with so many different opinions about it, and it's been so long in development, but it's something that I do think we will revisit at some point.
Mm-hmm. And then what sorts of changes do you hope to see in the nursing home industry this year and in the years ahead?
For years, even when I was in the home health space, my desire was to see the recognition of the value that post-acute care offers along the broader continuum of care. These are providers who are struggling because of the low reimbursement and the high regulatory burden to care for some of the highest acuity and sickest patients in our society. And they don't get the recognition that they deserve. This recognition could drive better reimbursement and more collaborative regulatory relationships. But I'd love to see post-acute care held up as the value-added sector that it truly is.
And then, Tracy, since this is the recent podcast, what do you think federal and state officials and the public should rethink about the nursing home industry?
I love this question. Thank you. I think number one is that the skilled nursing industry, the post-acute care industry, is filled with people who genuinely care about residents, patients, and families. They want to do the right thing. And that is their default every day when they walk into the facility. The vast majority of these people, these professionals, are trying their best to meet requirements set by state and federal regulators. And the public doesn't know how often those requirements change or are not uniformly interpreted or applied across all facilities or regions or even states. Regulatory enforcement looks very different even within one state. And I'd love for federal and state officials and the public to have a brighter lens, a more clear lens into that aspect. And I think the second is that quality care is not inexpensive. Many payers do not reimburse for the actual cost of the high quality care and the concurrent staffing levels that are necessary to provide that care. Public doesn't know, and frankly, they shouldn't have to worry about how nursing facilities are paid. They should be able to find good quality care in their communities provided by people who are fairly compensated for their work and, frankly, for the passion that they bring to their roles. And I'd like to see both of those issues recognized at all levels.
Well, thank you so much, Tracy. That's the end of our questions for today. So thank you so much for your insight and definitely excited for this one. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Amy. It's been great to chat with you.
That does it for this episode of Rethink. I'd like to remind listeners about our next webinar, Planning Ahead, Staffing Lessons from 2025 and the Road to 2026. The staffing webinar will take place from noon to 1 p.m. Eastern Time on Tuesday, March 24th. Visit skillednursingnews.com and click on webinars at the top of the screen to register.